It's that time of day to throw on your favorite movie or stream the best new show. And most importantly, it's time to sit back and relax with Raisin Bran After Hours, where we take a closer look at the shows and movies you may or may not know, as well as all things creative. What is up, everyone? Welcome back to Raisin Bran After Hours. In this special episode, our very first episode in this series of podcasts, we're calling this The Director's Chair. This is basically like if you had a director's commentary of the movie, but instead of having the directors, you have two random dudes who are fans of the movie.
Yeah,
pretty doing the commentary. So
movie commentary.
Exactly. So we're gonna go in depth on.
We do have a background in directing and creating videos.
So,
and
yeah,
stuff.
We're not. Two
so we're not
people.
Like we're random people, maybe to listeners, but we have experience working at Pixel Labs and creating content on a regular basis.
You know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So, today we're going to be diving deep into the movies and taking a perspective as directors ourselves and talking about, you know, some of the choices made and, you know, what we thought about them and just analyzing, you know, the directing of this movie. Because I think when you review a movie, you talk about everything.
Oh, yeah.
I think we're really going to be focusing on the directing.
Spoiler alert ahead of time.
Yeah, spoiler alert.
The movie Good Time.
Yeah.
If you haven't. Just in case anything gets talked about.
That's right. So, yeah, today we're talking about the indie classic. I would call it a classic by now. Yeah. Produced by A24, directed by Josh and Benny Safdie. We're talking about Good Time today.
Good
Time. This came out in 2017, I believe.
Did it not say in the description over there?
It might say in the description. I haven't read that yet.
I didn't know.
No, it doesn't say.
Okay.
But Good Time. I'll read you off a quick summary synopsis of the movie for those who haven't seen. But if you have an interest in seeing it, I definitely say you should pause this, go watch this, because we're going to talk about some spoilers here. But it's a great movie. Definitely recommend it. After a botched bank robbery, Lance, his younger brother, in prison, Konstantin Kanenikas, played by Robert Pattinson, embarks on a twisted odyssey through the city's underground in an increasingly desperate and dangerous attempt to get his brother Nick, played by Benny Safdie, out of jail. Over the course of one adrenalized night, Connie finds himself on a mad descent into violence and mayhem as he races against the clock to save his brother and himself, knowing their lives hang in the balance. Yeah.
Whew. Yeah.
That's a nice summary.
Thank you. I stole it from the A24 website.
Okay. I was going to say this sounded like.
I did not write that.
Yeah, it sounded like
something. I took it from A24.com or .net. Perfect. I don't know what their thing is.
Honest, but yeah, that's.
So yeah, that's the
one way to summarize the movie, I think. I think.
That's just like Slate type of thing. Yeah.
I think it's a good summary, but even then, I think there's so much more to this movie.
Does not prepare you.
No, not at all.
Like, I watched this with my parents. I didn't know anything about it. Yeah, fun fact.
I think I watched this with my mom at one point, too. Yeah, you're right.
They were like, what's a good movie? I was like, oh, Tristan recommended Good Time. Pretty much, I wanted to see it. I was home, and I just wanted to see it. So I was like, they're either going to hate me, or they're going to enjoy this ride. And they enjoyed it. They were uncomfortable. Yeah. But
I've learned my movie recommendations may or may not put off my family or anything like that.
It's nothing ever too bad.
Exactly. And I think my mom probably liked either that or she just told me she did. But
yeah.
I remember the first time I saw this was in the theater. I think this is one of the few times where I was the only one in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
Back in 2017.
I never heard anything about this until you told me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I used to watch a lot of YouTube movie commentary, movie news, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I was watching, I think it was Collider Movie Talk is the show at the time. Ripped to that show, because that used to be a great show. And the late, great John Schnepp, who was a great movie commentator, movie news, talker, if you will. I remember he hyped this movie up wild. Like, I remember I had seen a few trailers for this on Facebook, and this was before I really got into the whole A24 phase, I guess, if you will. Like, before it kind of became like a
lifestyle.
Yeah, right, exactly. And this is like probably one of the first A24 movies that I remember, like, oh, this is an A24 movie. Like, I remember seeing that, before the trailer came out and seeing it before the credits in the movie. But I remember seeing that the trailer a few times. I'm like, is that Robert Pattinson? Like, what has this dude done since like Twilight?
Yeah, that's been like the biggest thing.
Exactly. And I watched the trailer. I'm like, oh, this kind of looks interesting, but I didn't think much of it other than that. And I assumed that it probably wasn't even going to come to the theater near us because it's an indie movie, smaller budget. A lot of times they don't reach us out here in Iowa with the smaller movies. No. Well, they reach us in Des Moines, but you have to drive 2 hours to go.
Yeah, but to say it took me forever to find The Shape of Water, and that wasn't even, that was a big budget film.
Indie movies are harder and harder to come by these days in the theater, which sucks because that's where I prefer to see them.
Oh yeah.
But I remember he hyped this movie up, and I remember thinking he used the word roller coaster.
Oh,
and yeah. I was like, okay, this sounds interesting. I think I love a good thriller. I love a good entertaining, edge of your seat movie. Let's go check it out. So went to the theater by myself, and I remember afterwards just kind of sitting there. I was like, okay, you were onto something. This is amazing. It really was a roller coaster of a movie. The ups and downs. You feel sick at times. Yeah, you know, there's some, I kind of almost think of it as, like even outside of a roller coaster, I kind of think of this movie as if you're going to like a really run down, dirty laser tag place. And I say that also because of the aesthetic of the movie.
Oh yeah.
It's very laser tag-esque, you know, you got the neon lights,
a lot of neon colors and,
you know, black light, it's wild. And you know, like after you leave, you know, you stepped in some gum, maybe like a kid puked on his way out or something like that.
It's definitely gritty.
Maybe it smells like pee a little bit.
Yeah.
like that's how you feel coming out of this movie.
Like they did a crazy good job at making it just feel very realist. Cause it feels like it's a thriller and yeah, it's all fake and stuff, but yet it feels real. Like it's not, it's just touching a lot of the ideas of like, how did he do that? It's like just kind of tapping those, like, because I think at some point he like, oh, he gets a guy out of the hospital, which is like one of those things of like, how the heck do you get someone out of the hospital and don't quite and have no one realize it? And it's one of those things of if you just suspend your disbelief a little bit,
it's like very on the edge.
Yeah,
of reality.
It's like it's fiction. Able to be done. It would it happen often? No, but. It's a movie where if you heard this on the news, it'd be something like, whoa, I can't believe that. Like, you wouldn't hear it often.
You probably
it'd be
would
a
think
one-off
of like,
story
like
where
that
it's
happened
like,
in Florida
whoa.
Or something.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Yeah, but it's like one of those like, oh, like, yeah.
Like, once every couple of years, you get a crazy, realistic story like this. And it's kind of like Joe Exotic. Joe Exotic was a crazy storyline to hear about. And that was real. And this movie is like, not it has doesn't have animals in it, and it's not that type of crazy, but crazy stuff happens in it where you're like, there's no way, but then if you probably think about it, there's a way.
There's a way.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think I've seen this movie like 6 or 7 times in total since then.
Nice.
But yeah, that was kind of my initial reaction. Talk about the first time you experienced it, Noah, and you know, where were you when you I guess you kind of did a little bit. What were your initial thoughts? Yeah, you watched it with your parents. That's right. Family what were your initial night. Thoughts after seeing it, though?
I think after seeing it, I was amazed by Robert Pattinson's accent, given that he is British. And he does an amazing, like, New York / it's kind of Boston. I don't kind of.
Some sort of the Northeast accent, yeah.
But I seriously, for the entire movie, forgot that he was a British actor. would have sworn that he was American because everyone was so dedicated. And that's what I think what I like about indie movies and why I'm usually very satisfied after every indie movie is because you can tell everyone did this solely because they wanted to. Because they have no big budget to dangle in front of people and stuff. Like this was something where this is the only other movie I'd seen Robert Pattinson in up until this point, other than Twilight.
Right.
And totally could see from a actor point of view of getting really involved in this to prove to the world that you're more than the Twilight character that you were made famous for, or like the Harry, or for some people, Harry Potter.
Yeah, right.
But still that same, that was still in that same realm of like teenage audiences where this is very adult. I'm pretty sure it's R rated, the movie. But it's just crazy to see his range. Like, it really showed range. And then from then on, he's been doing a lot of crazy pieces and now is getting a lot more back into the spotlight with way more adult pieces.
Yeah.
But he does them very, very well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was definitely the... I mean, there was a few movies that he was great in before this, but this was like the first mm-hmm. like coming out major rehabilitation of his... Mm-hmm. Not that he even needed it. He was fine in all the other movies. It's just they got a bad rap because it's, you know, Twilight and
yeah,
and
like I remember fiction, for a while he was stuff. In like... I think he was in that Water for Elephants movie and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, he did like a couple small things where it's like, it was harmless, you know? Like, mm-hmm. he did that movie where... Oh, Remember Me, where it was revealed there's a 9/11 movie at the end of it or something.
Yeah. But I feel like with some of those, you could tell that the difficulty with it was that he was a hot commodity at the time, so they just paid him a bunch. Like, I think mainly of the Water for Elephants movie, because mm-hmm. my mom hated that movie because she read the book. And was like, they ruined it, which I'm sure they did. I didn't read the book. But that was around the Twilight time and stuff, and I could totally see, because there was so much hype, whenever that commercial came on, it was always Robert Pattinson.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody, I don't remember who else was in it. Somebody else. And it's like all these big name stars where you think it's going to be really, really good, but then you go see it, and it's like, you know, that was lacking.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when you go see Good Time, or when you watch Good Time, nobody, whether they're major characters, minor characters, side characters, even in there, like the taxi driver, they leave it all out there for you. Mm-hmm. Like, it is, everyone is very, very dedicated, and that just makes for good content.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly. Like, he was never the issue, but he never stood out either necessarily mm-hmm. because of the context of the movies. This was one where now you talk about Robert Pattinson, everyone's like the Twilight guy, and you're like, no, the Good Time guy.
Good Time
you
guy.
Point to this movie well, and say like
the Lighthouse guy
or the Lighthouse Batman. Or the Batman. Yeah. Or like it's,
it's just
amazing
growing.
How his career
that one with Tom Holland, I watched it just recently.
Oh, The Devil All the Time.
The Devil All the Time. Yeah. And I was like, that's what it is. Mm-hmm. I almost said... no, I didn't almost say that. I was thinking there will like be blood or something. But mm-hmm. I'm like, that's not
yeah.
remotely close.
But anyway. It is amazing how this movie, in a way... Oh, and it actually was the movie that kind of landed him the Batman role. Mm-hmm. Matt Reeves comes out and says like, yeah, I saw him in Good Time, and I was like, yeah, this is the dude.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's a great first reaction. Yeah, I think yeah honestly, one of the first reactions that you can have from watching this movie is like, Robert Pattinson, wow. Like,
yeah, you would not
chameleon, like
never would have seen it in a million years, but here he is.
Mm-hmm. So why did we want to pick this movie to talk about, I guess? Like, what made you kind of want to talk about this one? I honestly, because there's a lot to talk about, I guess,
is
probably
a
big reason. I think it's probably not underrated, but not a lot of, it's like not in the mainstream quite yet.
Yeah, and I think that was something for me that where it came to my mind immediately, because mm-hmm. it was something where this is a segment where we essentially highlight a movie and we hopefully hype it up for you. Get like the goal of the director's chair is not that I'm hoping it's never that goal of we watch a movie and we just talk about how bad it was the entire time. Like, oh, we would do it so much better. Like, I want to hopefully with these episodes, encourage people to watch new movies or to just rewatch old classic movies in a new way. So I think for the first episode, this was a fun one to talk about, or I guess it was the first thing that popped in my head, just because, yeah, I'm like, I don't know anyone that's talked about this widely outside of us.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like you watch it and you're uncomfortable, but yeah, it's good.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's very, very good.
Yeah, I would say in the independent film sphere, it's you know pretty well respected and
yeah,
and,
but mainstream wise.
If you get outside of that, mm-hmm. like you said, there's like still people that see Robert Pattinson cast as Batman. Oh, you're talking about the Twilight guy? It's like yeah. no, like go watch this movie and you'll see like
it's
he's so
different.
Much more than this. Like. And so I hope like him being in these major movies gets people to go back and mm-hmm. watch some of these other movies he's in because it's great. But yeah, I think it's one of those things. Yeah, like if you even if you kind of just somewhat enjoy movies, like there's people that like you and me, we love movies. Like we love
yeah.
each and everything about movies. We love making them, especially. I think that's a big part of why we love movies. But you know, there's some people who just like movies, and that's fine. Like they don't get super into it. They don't mm-hmm. necessarily care as much about specific things that we might care about, which is totally fine. Like that's just their viewing patterns and yeah. everything. But I think even people who consume movies like that can get something and find something in this movie that is just cool. Mm-hmm. Now a lot of people might think, oh, it's kind of weird. Cause there's some pretty
some
weird
stuff
that happens in
but
it.
It's like, unique.
Mm-hmm.
Like you don't, I can't recall ever seeing these things again, unless you, like in a previous podcast, we talked about creativity and stuff. Unless you boil it down to like its bare bones, this is a very unique story, a very original story.
So let's talk about some of the themes that are in this movie. I think some of the big ones that I can count on my fingers right now is like the theme of like brotherhood and family. That's family's a huge a thing one. That drives this because of his relationship to his handicapped brother. And how he feels like he has to take care of him. But at the same time, there's also, you know, a lot of morality themes. And then also
self-doubt.
Yeah. Desperation.
Like your own worth.
There's, I guess, I don't know how to pinpoint it, but there's a big part of the movie where, Robert Pattinson's brother, played by Benny Safdie, one of the directors, what is his name? His name is Nick in the movie. So he has some sort of special needs. I don't know. They don't address it exactly, but
it's something
some sort of cognitive disability, basically.
Maybe kind of like autism or something. Something like that. They never. It's not. That's not a point of the movie. You just know that he's. It has like a mental handicap of some sort.
Yeah, exactly. And so they start off the movie where he's going to some sort of behavioral therapist or some sort of special ed counselor, basically.
I thought it was kind of like a, or yeah, was it the counseling? And then they were trying to get him into like a
group or something.
A group where they have almost like a group home type thing in New York.
Exactly. They're trying to get him in there, but immediately Robert Pattinson comes in and is like, what are you guys doing? Like, no, we're taking him out of here. He doesn't need help. Like, he's perfectly fine. He's my brother. And then he completely screws up the rest of his life, basically. But the thing is, the bond, their bond is so strong that Robert Pattinson's brother, Nick, the brother, is, you know, looks up to his older brother, Connie, and wants to be just like him. And Connie kind of manipulates him into thinking like, hey, we're going to, you know, we're going to go live. I don't remember where they say, but they're going to go live on a farm somewhere with the animals. And Nick is like really looking forward to that.
Mice and Men a little bit.
Actually, you're right. Yeah.
It's a little bit of like a Mice and Men story where you got Connie, con artist a little bit. Like, I always screw this up in a Mice and Men. I don't think it's George. Is George the.
George and Lenny. Is that who it is? Yeah, I think. I don't remember which is which, actually, now that you mentioned it, but Lenny might be the bigger one.
Yeah, maybe. I'm not quite sure. If you're familiar with the story, let us know in the comments. Anyway, it feels kind of like that, like when I was rewatching it and actually kind of like processing it and stuff. It feels a lot like that, where, except in a more modern take, where obviously all Nick, Benny Safdie character, wants, he just wants a life. He wants a normal life. Because he has people telling him that he's not normal. He has people telling him that he needs assistance doing things when he can do things on his own. He can do something. Now he can't run away from the police on his own, but
cannot.
He also wouldn't be in that situation if it wasn't for his caretaker brother,
right?
Which he, I feel like, needs his brother as a way for him to not feel like a loser. Because I feel like Robert Pattinson's character Connie is very. I feel like he feels very, or views himself very poorly, and that taking care of his brother is what gives him more of a purpose. Otherwise, he's a robber and a thief and a scumbag.
Right.
Like, but if he robs a bank, if he does these bad things for his handicapped brother to provide for him, then he's a little bit more like a hero. It's like, oh, I'm doing what I need to do to help him survive, not, oh, I don't want to, like, just get a normal job or something, like whatever you want to use as excuse.
It's interesting because I see it almost both ways in his character. It seems like some of it is him manipulating his brother to go and do crimes and rob banks and stuff like that. But then there also is like the nicer, sweet, you know, innocent part of him that, like, I think, yeah, they're kind of doing it to help give them a better life. But it's, at times it feels like he's very selfish and conning all these people into helping him. So it's like, he's very, great, I guess, in the way that he's got some good in him, but also like half of what he does, I can't tell if it's like, you know, for selfish gain.
Yeah, it's like when his brother, again, spoiler alert, when his brother gets arrested after the botched bank robbery, the whole movie then at that point is him, he knows his brother shouldn't be in jail, and he knows whether it, you want to chalk it up to he feels bad that he got him in there, or that like he just doesn't think that with his mental capacity he should be in the state prison system, like they're not gonna take, they're not gonna take care of him well or whatnot, whatever you want to come with his reasoning is. The rest of the movie he's trying so hard and so desperately to just get him back, like doesn't, you could kind of argue he doesn't even really care about the money or the material things except for when he needs them to give to someone else to help further, like with the little girl and getting the car. Like he had to kind of, it was creepy, but had to do what he had to do to persuade her to get the car so that he could get to the hospital and get to his brother and whatnot, or like, oh no, that was after, to get the guy that he thought was his brother.
Yeah. Away somewhere. Yeah. Oh, there's so
he manipulated a child to get a car.
Yeah, basically. There's, yeah, because so basically after that whole robbery situation, and that's like the, that's the setup. He's, his brother's in jail. He has to get him out. He has to get money for bail. He has to get him out. But then there's so many things that come and mess up this whole situation. It basically, everything at every turn goes completely wrong.
Yes.
And it just evolves further and further into this gritty, maddening, like, odyssey. Like,
you fall down the rabbit hole hard in this movie. Yeah, like you said, it's like every possible step he takes, he trips.
Right.
And he trips down a flight of stairs.
So I guess to kind of just wrap up the summary of that story. So basically, yeah, he... I find it interesting. Yeah, he has to go to the bail bonds place, but he has to give money. It's like, okay, he gives him money, but he can't take the money because it was the money that they just robbed. So he has to go. He has another special needs friend that he goes and manipulates and gets their mom's credit card. And then so finally they got the money for that. But the bail goes through, but his brother is now in the hospital because he got into a fight in jail. So he's like, he's in the hospital. So he goes to the hospital and he finds his brother and breaks him out of the hospital, only to find that he grabbed the wrong guy.
Yeah, because his brother got his face beaten in pretty hard. So he had bandages all over his face. And of course, this guy that he finds was like tripping on acid or something and rolls out of a car, severely damaging his face. They're both in these bandages, both criminal charges, so of course he grabs the one he sees and it's not the one he needs.
And then he ends up taking a bus with the guy, goes to this old lady's house and seduces her daughter, her like 16-year-old granddaughter or whatever, which is that was one of the messed up parts. So like that's like a content warning
for
anyone uncomfortable with that. There's some weird
trigger warning
on that but again, it's like one of those things where it's so shocking. You're like, God, like this guy is so messed up. Like, what is he doing? And again, nothing like it. And it ends up not going like too far, thankfully.
No. And he does it. He's not attracted to her. It's a thing of distraction. Like she was gonna, I think, do like tell her grandma or like rat them out or something.
On the TV,
Oh, yeah. They were watching TV and they saw that he was wanted. So then he starts making out with her
to so weird.
Distract her, which is gross, but you know it's not like he's not a predator. It's just something where he's like, again, honestly, because bad stuff is happening, he's like, God, take a bullet.
Took a bullet on that one. So then he gets her car and they get the guy who's not his brother. And then their next objective after that is to go and find this bottle of acid that they're going to sell to get the money to get his brother out of jail. Then that leads them to an amusement park of like a literal
where they
like
stashed
because
the guy was so high before
he doesn't know.
And then so they're running around this amusement park in the dark. This is where the laser tag really, there's a lot of black light, and then they get caught by a security guard and they gotta deal with that because he called the cops. So then they, it gets spirals and spirals and spirals until do we want to say the ending, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about spoilers already. Yeah, so true. He ends up getting caught by the police, and it's this big dramatic thing. Like, he went through all this hassle only to just
get caught,
end up getting caught. And in the way the ending, it's kind of a almost happy cathartic ending in a way, because
sort of,
his brother actually ends up getting the help that he needs. He's going to, he goes to the group home, and they show him
participating
and actually interacting with people that are helping him.
Yeah.
That's doing some good. It's actually like a good positive change. He doesn't end up having to go to prison. He ends up having to go to this group home with and is able to, you know, communicate with these people and get help, I guess, or assistance, or just learn his life.
Like learn how he can contribute to society in his own way, type of thing, as opposed to just being an accessory to crimes.
And so, yeah, it's actually like a nice ending in a way, because what should happen happens. Like, he should, Robert Pattinson's character should go to jail the whole time, whether or not you're kind of rooting for him in a way. That's what should happen. And at the end, you're like, you really can't argue with that. Like, he didn't deserve it. And then at the end also, Nick, he gets the help he needs, and he's hopefully going to leave a successful life. And I mean, I doubt Robert Pattinson's going to be in jail for maybe he gets like a couple years, 10 years or something like that. He's coming out, and
you never know.
Maybe he gets rehabilitated. I don't know. I kind of hope he does, but
maybe he does.
So let's talk about the sound and the music from a directing standpoint. I think this is another thing that makes this stand out. I mean, honestly, virtually all elements of this movie stand out, and that's why it's so great.
Oh yeah.
But the sound design, in particular the music and the score of this,
A24 has awesome music always.
They do, yeah. It's wild. So the score was done by Winotrix Point Never. I think he has an actual, he goes by an actual name now. I forgot his name. But when he does more scores now, but that was like his stage name for a while. The score is wild. It blends in a lot of ambient sound, synthy stuff, but it's not like straight up like, oh, like 80s synth, like doo 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 doo. It's like literally so ambient and so, what's the word I'm thinking of?
It's kind of like he created, like every day, like if life had a soundtrack to it, that's, I think, the best way that, at least I can describe it. And yeah, like how you were saying, like he has synth, but it's mixed in so well with the ambient noise of New York, which is, it's a lot of noise in New York. So that's already convenient. But yeah, he just works in all these instruments and all these musical things into natural life sounds. I think that's where, like, you can tell it's just very, it's just so integrated.
Yeah, no, I would agree. It's very improvisational, very ambient, very mysterious, dark. And it's great. It made me really look forward to seeing his music, and he definitely didn't disappoint on future soundtracks that he was on. So that was great. From a directing standpoint, again, though, this was just, there's so many unique choices that they made that are very stylistically, you know, tied to the directors, Josh and Benny Safdie. They're brothers, which is great. Actually, that was cool. Like, it's cool to see another brother directing duo, like the Coen brothers, or I know there's been like a few throughout the years, but the Safdie bros are like the next big like brother duo. And I thought it was interesting having one of the directors actually be in the movie. Benny Safdie was in the movie. He played Nick. And then I think they also did some of the editing on this too.
Really?
They were pretty heavily involved in a lot of the other creative aspects of this movie, which I think is wild. I think one of them did the editing, and they both wrote it as well. And yeah, it blows my mind. One of the stylistic choices, the aesthetics that is really tied to them, is they shoot in a lot of very close up angles.
Yeah.
Almost uncomfortably so. Like, you want to be able to soak in the scene and establish things, but they very rarely ever use a lot of wide establishing shots. I think the few times that they actually do in the movie are these really fast paced drone shots or helicopter shots that they do of the cars driving. That's some of the widest shots that we actually get in the movie. Otherwise, I'll always remember the very first shot of this movie is just something that's so eye-catching, something so different and unique, is when Nick is sitting in the counselor's office, and the camera's on him, and suddenly it pans over and zooms into Robert Pattinson coming in the door. It's something you never see, like, out there type of shot.
It's
such
bold.
It's a bold, yeah, like, different thing. Like, it's not like that, like, wild that they did that. It's not like the technique was that crazy. It was just something so against the standard of what you would typically see from a cinematographer. Like, in a typical movie, mm-hmm, you'd see probably like a cut to a wide shot.
Yeah,
he'd come in. Whereas like this was
establishing
just,
shot.
You keep the one shot and it zooms in, and it's almost like, whoa, like, it's throwing you onto this character, mm-hmm, and you're kind of disoriented a little bit. I'll always remember that shot because that's one that just always stands out to me, because that kind of sets the tone of what the rest of this movie is really going to be in, mm-hmm, terms of, you know, visuals and style.
I think, yeah, a lot of the directing choices as far as like cinematography and stuff goes, like you were saying with that one, like their style definitely throws you into the scene and makes you feel like you're part of it. Like that zoom in onto Robin Pattinson coming in, like busting in,
mm-hmm,
because it's so close and so tight, like you see it, like it feels like it's happening to you,
right,
like the viewer almost.
Mm-hmm.
And they do that throughout the entire movie. Like there's stuff like that, not like that same shot, but they do stuff similar. And I think that's where the idea of them having these such tight shots come in, is that it puts the audience in there. You're no longer, you don't feel as much like a third party watching all this play out. You're in the story, like you're there with them. And that's, I think, also why I sweat when I watch it, or I'm just like, oh my gosh,
mm-hmm,
what is happening? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah, it's definitely interesting because, yeah, like most people get taught where it's like you need an establishing shot, then you can come in, get the real tight shots for the really intense moments. Like they clearly know the rules and they're comfortable breaking the rules,
right,
which then makes it feel unique and creative in their own way.
Mm-hmm. And I think, this one's not as like original or unique, but like the whole neon, 80s vaporwave,
yeah,
aesthetic. That's just, yeah, it's like a nice touch. Mm-hmm. And I think they do it in a different enough way where it's not like, like, oh yeah, bright colors, neon stuff. It
feels way grittier.
It does feel way grittier. It almost feels like they heavily relied on like the 3D goggles glasses colors, like the magenta-ish red and like, mm-hmm, the teal blue. That's a huge color. That's like the color palette is
the color palette. Yeah, the color palette is
great. It's great. It's not necessarily a unique original thing, but I think the way they added it into this just pops so well. I love it. It's like so great. Another thing I think that I loved about this was the editing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know how I would describe it. It's just like there's a certain pace to it, and at times it's slow when it needs to be. It's a little bit more quicker when it needs to be. It's just, yeah.
Yeah.
It's great.
It hits all the marks in the right spots. Like whenever something bad is happening, you get Robin Pattinson's characters. Like you get like his sense of crap.
Mm-hmm.
Like when he's watching the news with the girl and she realizes that he's wanted, or like when he like uncovers that the guy he took from the hospital wasn't actually his brother and everything like that. Like it slows down in those moments because that's what you would do in real, like you could tell through his character. And in a real life scenario, if you were doing that, it would slow down.
Mm-hmm.
You would be like your heart would stop of, oh my gosh, who are you? Or like, what is happening? I don't know what I'm doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then once he comes up with this plan, it moves so fast because you can tell he's like just thinking by like the seat of his pants type of thing. Like he's just improving his way through all this, hoping it's going to work out.
Mm-hmm.
And that is reflected in the editing with it then being like, okay, he has a plan, he's putting it into motion. It's going to speed up. And because it's going so fast, he's going to screw up because he's not aware enough of his situation.
Mm-hmm. So I guess as directors, as we are, you know, there's certain things that we like, some things we don't like, some things we change about a movie. Is there anything that you would change about this movie from your standpoint?
I'm not entirely sure. I think it's something where it could be interesting to always play things in a different way.
Sure.
Which is that's a weird answer. I'm just trying to think, because I think I guess some of the things that I think makes it, or some things that I think become a little predictable is that it reminds me a lot of other A24 movies, which I don't know if this is just one where like this one set the bar and the other ones kind of copied a lot of the feeling, but it reminds me a lot of, which is done by the same people, Uncut Gems, like even the music and stuff, which I'm, it might be the same.
It is. Yeah. Same medium.
So it's like, not that I feel like if you watch those movies together, not that either one of them is bad in their own, like they're kind of a similar vibe. And I think that's something where looking back, it could be like, it could be interesting to see them explore these stories, like in their own unique way to like that. Like not that they're not in their own unique way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to figure out a word. Like, cause I do like the movie a lot. And yeah. I guess I don't know off the top of my head anything I would totally drastically change.
No. Yeah. I think it's one of those movies. Yeah. I see you're like struggling to come up with something to change. Honestly, I don't know if there's anything I would change. I think that's what makes it so great. And now it's not like a perfect movie by any means, but like,
no,
it's so unique in its ways that like, I think if anything, I might change things about my style based on things mm-hmm. that you learn. You know, you steal different things mm-hmm. and little tidbits from everything that you watch. And I think there's definitely a lot that I would take note from this as a director and love to implement in future projects. I don't think there's a lot that I would really change. Honestly, it's its own unique, not perfect, but you know, picture perfect, like nice little package, I guess is mm-hmm. what I would say. So
yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any final thoughts on this movie? You know, any last bits of insight?
I think just check it out. Just see what it's about. it's not, it's not crazy long, is it? It's only like,
it's probably only maybe a max like 2 hours, but it's got a pretty, pretty tight runtime. It's a roller coaster. Mm-hmm. Like I said, like it's,
it doesn't feel like a very, if it is 2 hours, it doesn't feel like 2 hours.
No, it breezes right by, and I believe you can check it on Netflix right now.
Yeah, at least that's,
I
know that's for how I watched it.
Yeah, so I know it's on Netflix for a while. I believe it still might be there. Definitely highly recommend
probably it. Probably get it through if you buy it from Amazon Prime or something. Or
yeah, you can rent it for it a probably, few other places. Yeah. But highly recommend it. It's a great, really mm-hmm. entertaining watch. It's probably unlike anything I think you've really ever seen, just from the aesthetics of it alone.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got a great story. It's well-written, well-performed, well-directed. Highly recommend it. And yeah, it's a great one to kick off our first episode of The Director's Chair. I look forward to doing more of these because I like rewatching these movies and, you know, coming back and doing like a retrospective talk back analysis of these mm-hmm. and everything. So, great choice for this, Noah. We really hope you enjoyed this episode of Raisin Bran After Hours on this little segment we like to call The Director's Chair. We look forward to doing more of these. Yeah. We're talking about some more movies, and we definitely appreciate it if you go out and take the time to watch this movie if you haven't already, because mm-hmm. I think there's something that we can all kind of gather from experiencing different things that are out of our, you know, comfort zones or out of our boxes, I guess, if you will, and everything. So really appreciate you taking the time to listen to this podcast and listen to us rant and rave about movies that we love. Love getting that opportunity. So thank you so much for listening, and we will see you all in the next episode. Everybody, just wanted to say thank you so much for listening, and be sure to subscribe to stay updated on all of our new episodes. Also, make sure you check out our YouTube channel, Retro Neon Film, to see all of our creativity on display, and check out our branding and marketing podcast on the feed as well, and it's called Raisin Brand. And if you'd like to be a guest on our show in the future, just email podcast@thepixellab.co. That's podcast@thepixellab.co. Thank you again, and have a great week.